All right, everybody, it is time for another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. But before we dive in to our awesome, awesome guest and conversation today, I want to remind you guys of two things. And the first one is that if you go to crypto101insider.com, you can join our private community. Here's where we have our model portfolio and all of our top picks. We also have Crypto 101 University, where we have hours and hours and hours of written and video content that explains blockchain and explains cryptocurrency in a very bite-sized and easy to understand way. And we have a weekly newsletter that goes out and quarterly state of crypto addresses that go out. There is just a ton of value packed into this every which way. So I want you guys first to go to crypto101insider.com today, if you haven't already. I also want to remind you guys that Pizza Mind and I recently just finished a book. It took 11 months of our lives to write, and we're calling it Crypto Revolution, Your Guide to the Future of Money. We walk you through this fascinating world of cryptocurrencies and blockchain, and it's part history book, it's part instructional guide, and it's going to really show you guys why cryptocurrencies are globally disruptive and how they're going to actually change in real life and in real terms the way that we buy and sell and even live. We include a bunch of how-tos on getting started with your first exchanges. We give you tips on how to safely buy and sell and store cryptocurrencies, as well as how do we evaluate potentially good cryptocurrencies. And the best part of the book is that we're giving it away for free. All you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. So go to cryptorevolution.com and pick up your copy today. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast, where I'm, all as always, joined by my notorious compadre, Mr. Pizza Mind Malone. And today we have a very interesting conversation lined up for you, one that is going to center around everybody's favorite 11 letter word, regulation. How many letters are in regulation?
That's what's on the schedule today?
It's a bad word. No, it's a good word because, you know, regulation is necessary, right, for this crypto space. And regulation is something that when the proper frameworks are devised and understood, right, you know, the industry could really flourish. And so, Pete, we're going to learn today about crypto regulation from a guy who's on the bleeding edge. And so we have with us today, Wesley Thysa. Wesley, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So Pete, what's going through your mind? I know you're generally quite a bit more paranoid than I am. I tend to think that all this stuff is going to work itself out. There's no big boogeyman that's going to come and steal our coins. And there's no regulatory body that's going to be able to shut crypto down and bring prices to zero. But you have a little bit of a different take.
Well, I don't even really consider myself a paranoid person. I just read. And, you know, you're reading books on like candlesticks and charts and finance and stuff. And I'm reading things about the legal end of things. And it really, really scares me, the picture that's being painted. One of the things that scared me the most happened to be this new infrastructure bill that's coming out in the U.S. Congress and some of the things that are hidden inside of it, as well as FATF guidelines. And it just so happened that I saw this amazing Reddit thread that outlined all these things that are coming down the pipeline to try and regulate crypto. But it's not in a way that, you know, makes it fair and open for everyone or clarifies certain things. It is actually quite the opposite. And it just turned out that the author of that Reddit thread reached out to us to come on the show at the exact same time I was trying to find out who this guy is to bring him on the show. And Wesley is now here with us. So Wesley, welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast. And thank you so much for spending some time with us tonight.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Interesting
what you come up with. Yeah, it is indeed invasive, a lot of these regulations.
Yeah, interesting. So, we're going to dive into some legal stuff, although
you know, me and Pizza Mind, we're not lawyers. We're never, ever going to furnish anybody with legal advice. Nothing that you hear on this show is legal advice or professional advice or financial advice. It's all educational in nature. But let's come to the table with an open mind and let's learn. But first, Wesley, give us a little update on who you are and why you have the authority to speak on such matters.
Okay, so yeah, in my profession, I advise on international tax legislation. And yeah, the way that that was devised, it's a specific type of the tax law. It's called the transfer pricing regulation.
It's called what?
And that was transfer pricing.
Transfer pricing regulation.
Yeah, so that is to prevent multinational companies to shift their profits offshore. And that type of regulation was rolled out around 2016, 2015. That was a big push by international regulators. And I figured that that would be implemented in Asia. So I started a business with a partner of mine. And that whole process of international regulators coming up with regulation has now been, I've thought now that's going to happen in crypto as well. So it's just a repeat of what I saw before. So that's how I got to writing about this. On the side, I have been in crypto, at least going to meetups and being interested since 2013 or 14. And I've been specifically researching legal projects since 2017 with a big ICO happening. You know, all these projects had wonderful ideas of how they're going to change the world. And I started reading white papers, and a lot of that was just very basic and not really considering the reality. So that's how I sort of got into the crypto legal stuff. And now when I saw this coming down the line, especially the FODEF regulation, I think we will talk about it next, but that was really opened my eyes of what is coming for crypto. Yeah.
So let's start right there. First of all, who is FATF? FATF. What is this government body and why does anyone care what they have to say?
Yeah, so the Financial Action Task Force, so it's short FATF, is an international regulator established by a meeting of the G7. And it creates laws governing money laundering and terrorist financing. And around 2017-18, international governments started to get a bit of a scare of the proposed coin of Facebook, the Libra coin, because that would supposed to be a stable coin with a very large reach. And that scared them a little bit. And then they went to a G20 meeting where they discussed this topic. And then they assigned the FATF to come up with regulations to tackle this on a level that is above national governments. So these are international regulations.
Wow. And so obviously crypto as a global, you know, generally supposed to be permissionless, censorship-free technology. Is that just an ideal, or is that sort of ideal crumbling before our very eyes, according to you, Wesley?
That's a very good question. Definitely the regulators, have taken a serious look at this, and they are a bit worried about the peer-to-peer nature and the opportunities this gives for money to be shifted across borders without anybody knowing, at least from the regulator's point of view. And in their mind, that sort of makes their whole job very difficult. If you want to look at it, the sort of the gist of it, what they're trying to do is to move crypto to regulated entities of which the transactions can be monitored, and the people who transact are known to the regulators, to the KYC process. And obviously the KYC process is already active in most exchanges, right? In most on-ramps. But it seems to be that the international regulators want to the next step to discourage peer-to-peer transactions. So just to have it all done on exchanges.
Interesting. And so Do you think one of the logical outcomes of this is that in order to actually enforce such rules, that they would have to, you know, in order for somebody to withdraw money off of Coinbase or Gemini or Kraken, in order for them to withdraw it to a, you know, a personal wallet, that wallet needs to somehow be KYC'd or tagged to your identity. Is that kind of what you see as the future?
Well, we can go with what the FATF wrote in that guidance. They issued a very comprehensive framework for future guidance. And it was, they call it unhosted wallets, so they put it that way. And they do think that, unhosted wallet cause a risk to their oversight. So to, stability of the financial system. Yeah.
So there's a couple like regulatory bodies that I guess that are at work here. So there's the FATF, and that's like not necessarily like elected officials. Those are just like appointed kind of bureaucrats from the G7. Great. Love it. Love those appointed bureaucrats. So they're just pushing through laws, and they're just, you know, hoping that, you know, the FBI and or whatever, all these different regulatory bodies are going to, you know, kind of enforce that, because the FATF themselves, do they have the police essentially? Are they figures that, you know, they're going to come around like that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the way our legal system are set up is that international bodies don't have direct power, or let's say they don't legislate directly in our lives. But so they create what is called soft laws. But what then needs to happen is, then those laws need to be implemented by the countries that are part of the FATF or OECD.
Okay.
Or at least, indirectly. And then, once these laws are passed in the national legislation, then they are becoming.
And so now law. I guess the question is like, to get these sorts of laws approved, you know, in the States or in Germany or in Bali or whatever country anybody's from, right? They all kind of need to go through Congress, right? And so they're being voted.
Yeah, yeah.
So are these FATF rules what is in this infrastructure bill that's being looked at on this week, the week of September 28th?
Not necessarily, but they are in another proposed bill that I guess we can discuss that later. One of the things that that you have to see, because these are such broad laws created by FATF, that they don't necessarily match 100% with national legislation, right? Especially in the US, you have a very well established body of law regulating all sorts of things like securities and banking and things like that. So they cannot just change them with whatever comes up with. So they change them in such a way that it kind of matches the guidelines. At least that's from what I've seen. It was quite a big, I recognized it when I first read FATF guidance and then started reading what is happening in the US. I started to recognize the terms, and there's slight variation, but it's definitely being inspired by it.
Yeah.
And the same is being done in Europe. So the EU has proposed new legislation. I haven't gone through it, but they mentioned the word FATF 49 times. So. But they obviously are. I've looked at it.
Yeah, they're obviously privy, I suppose, right?
Yeah.
So this infrastructure bill. Give us like your hot take on what people really need to know about this infrastructure bill in regards to crypto regulation here in the States.
So this infrastructure bill was mainly a bill to fund federal highways and highway safety programs. But it started to be a lot of other things started to be included, amongst them some provisions on crypto. And the idea behind it was that taxation on crypto would pay for part of these expenses. And I think because there has been quite a lot of commotion about it, right? And that was mainly because, there was a new definition of broker introduced that would, everybody who transfers, who effectuates transfers of digital assets, needs to be reporting to the IRS. So that was a big scare for a lot of people, especially because also the definition of broker was so wide that it in theory could include miners and people who provide the infrastructure, because in a way they effectuate the transfer, right? It's a bit difficult to say how that will turn out, because there have been some amendments and these have so far been ignored, to my understanding. In general, if you look at least FATF regulations and things I've seen before, also guidance of officials, they do not consider mining and software development and these things as brokers. It's also, if you look at the technology, for example, of Bitcoin, it's impossible to force the miners to do KYC, for example, because that's just not how Bitcoin works, right? It's totally impossible. So I don't think that could be enforced, and I don't think that's a big problem. There's actually something that did get my attention this week, which is actually quite serious. I was emailed by a gentleman named Abraham Sutherland, and he is from the University of Virginia Law School. And he commented on something that the general public overlooked, and I overlooked as well. And that is that the treatment of cash for crypto transactions. So if you get according to that amendment to the section of the tax code, it says that any person who receives over $10,000 in digital assets must verify the sender's personal information, and including social security number, and sign and submit a report to the government. And you can check that out. It's IRS form 8300. And that's, according to that section, that's going to apply to crypto assets. So that could be a significant hurdle as well.
I think it'd be great if the US regulators could all get on the same page and at least use the same definitions, use the same tax framework at least, so we at least understand what a digital asset is. Is it property? Is it a commodity? Is it security? All that kinds of stuff. But it seems like still no one's really getting on the same page, which is continuing to be very frustrating. But then you've got these FATF guys complicating things even worse. What happens to countries that just ignore FATF, that say, okay, well, these are guidelines, thanks, but no thanks, we're going to do our own thing? What's the consequences of going against the little G7 club?
These guidance is supported by G20, so that's already a bigger club, right? So it contains most powerful countries in the world, and the FATF organizations, they do have a bit of a way to deal with countries that are not in line, and that's by putting them on gray and blacklist. So if you are put on a list called non-cooperative jurisdictions, and if you're on a gray or blacklist, well, blacklist means you're pretty much cut out from the financial system. And so that's Iran and North Korea, they're currently on that list. So that means that anybody who transacts with those countries, I've even had once a client who was born in Iran but lived her entire life in Belgium, and she couldn't open a bank account because of her place of birth was under passport, the Belgian passport.
Wow.
So the second step is that's sort of how they keep countries in line, is the gray list. So if a country doesn't necessarily implement these standards to the right degree, at least according to these regulators, then they are put on the gray list. And a lot of special regulated entities, they then become it becomes to wire money to these countries and things like that. So that's the thing. It's not it has teeth, you know. It's not just some people in office coming up with things.
So let me get this straight. They're basically drawing a line in the sand between the crypto system as we know it and the traditional finance system, and saying you're either going to play by the rules or you're being cut out. All this DeFi stuff, all this privacy stuff, that doesn't mean jack to us. You need to be completely transparent with companies that hold all the private keys so we can freeze your money at any time. Am I interpreting that right?
Yeah, that's kind of where it looks at. Yeah, it's like that's. I mean, it's not. It is a sort of like a. We're sort of like halfway, right? So it's a little bit difficult to say where it's exactly going to be. There's of course, what we can see in FATF, guidance. That's definitely sort of this idea what you just mentioned that summary. But if you look at U.S. laws, for example, if you regulate something as a commodity, it's not just that, not just bad, you know. It also means that you are protected, in the way you trade your commodities. I mean, for the same reason that you cannot ban the trade of cattle or things like that, it would also be difficult to, ban the trade of Bitcoin, you know, because then it's a legal commodity to trade. So it's sort of like an indirect way of regulating through financial intermediaries, and then discourage the use outside of these financial intermediaries. And obviously, because of the nature of cryptocurrencies, it remains to be seen how that plays out.
Definitely going to, in my mind, it feels like it's going to be just a mixture. You know, there's going to be protocols, like for instance, Aave has their ARC program, which is, institutions that are able to use the Aave DeFi platform. But these institutions all come together and they kind of KYC themselves, and people know the counterparties. And so there's that end. And there's also going to be, just general, all sorts of oversight. And one of the things that I'm trying to understand, though, is some of the similarities between, how the internet evolved and how the internet was regulated, and how, encryption, in certain, softwares that we, as Americans would export back in the 2000s. I know there was like the encryption wars. And do you have any insight on any similarities between that period and this current era?
That is an interesting, I read a paper on that section, and it was, in essence, there are no real standards for the internet, right? At least from a regulatory point of view, as compared to this. The thing is, I think they just see this as a way of people trying to circumvent existing regulations by just playing financial service provider. Let's put it that way, and then do it by crypto, and it's definitely a different kind of activity where internet is really just a technology. Crypto does a little bit more,
The one thing I'll say here on that point is just like, I think crypto isn't just, it's inherently technology, right? And bad people do bad things with a technology that's neutral, right? Like, people are going to use the internet to do bad things. People are going to use guns to do bad things. Well, people are also going to use internet to do good things and guns to do good things and Bitcoin to do good things. And so it's like bad people do bad things. Good people generally do good things. And so it regulation, if it comes down at the wrong angle from, people that are in charge that have no idea about this technology and don't know the soft points of it and points to leverage and stuff, then you're going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And if we kind of look at like what China's doing, right? Like China has banned Google, they've banned Facebook, they've banned Bitcoin, they've banned Twitter, they banned pretty much anything that is threatening to the status quo and, able to like kind of, circumvent their power. So it's like, we're no better than China if we completely try and, throw crypto out of the door because we're scared and we can't control it. I think it's like, and that's not really what's happening. There are some senators that are speaking out and saying, hey, if we go down this path is no different than China. And that's, I support those senators.
Yeah, exactly. To my understanding, like the US definitely has a legal process and a culture to really discuss this kind of things, right? There are some international regulations that the US doesn't abide by, and because they have such political clout, they can do so. So yeah, if there could going to be variations, it's going to come from a country like the US. But in the EU, they are going to accept this to the dot. I'm pretty sure about it because that's what they have always been doing, and I don't know why they would stop now. And unlike the US, we don't have any congressmen we can call. It's just a very different process in the EU. So yeah,
I see. So as the guidelines and the draft bills are written today, let's say it all passes. How does that change way the average person handles crypto? Are we still allowed to buy and sell and trade and stake and lend, or do certain things go away and maybe we're only able to use Coinbase? What would the future look like?
Yeah, I guess so. They could be a beneficiary of this in the end. I mean, that's how it unfortunately works. So it's a little bit difficult to see how it all plays out. I definitely think that there's going to be projects that are going to, those the ones are specifically targeted, right? So one of the things, there's a couple of things that are specifically looked at as bad by regulators, which also has been proposed in the latest bill, and that's the privacy coins and mixers. So those are your tools to obfuscate the transactions on the ledger, right? In theory, if you get a Bitcoin transaction and you know they know half of it, they know the other half of it, right? With Monero, that's different. So so those are the ones that are likely going to face a bit of headwind. The other one is stablecoins. Stablecoins are really considered a big risk by the financial regulators. So I would say that the use of that is going to be problematic at one point.
I want to talk for a minute about things that have fundamentally changed the way we live. These are the disruptors. Things like smartphones, okay? Streaming devices, whiter than white paint that actually cools down buildings. Things even like cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and smart contract platforms that are going to, house the applications of the future. But another one that I heard of recently is a company called Ladder. Okay. And Ladder basically took the life insurance industry and flipped it upside down, and it shook out all the inefficiencies. So before Ladder, if you wanted to get life insurance, you had to drive across town, sit through a sales pitch, fill out a ton of paperwork, and then wait like 6 to 8 weeks to find out if you've been approved. You'd also receive like a zillion phone calls from agents trying to bundle your life insurance with things like car insurance and other insurance and all sorts of stuff. But now with Ladder, you can get fast, affordable term life insurance without leaving home, okay? It's 100% digital when you apply for $3 million or less in coverage. No doctors, no needles, no paperwork, all right? So if you're between the ages of 20 and 60, and you need coverage and you want to team up with a company that's redeeming life insurance, choose Ladder. So go to ladderlife.com/crypto101 today to see if you're instantly approved. So that's ladderlife.com/crypto101, ladderlife.com/crypto101. Today, many small business owners are busier than ever. I mean, time spent searching for and interviewing candidates can take time away from managing and growing a business. And that's why LinkedIn Jobs has made it easier to get the candidates worth interviewing faster, and it's free. In fact, I mean, here at Crypto 101, we used LinkedIn to hire our newest employee, Ryan. And funny enough, he actually in turn worked with the folks at LinkedIn to partner with us here on the podcast as a sponsor. So how about that? You can create a job post in minutes on LinkedIn Jobs to reach your network and beyond to the world's largest professional network of over 770 million people. You can focus on candidates with the skills and experience you need, and you could use screening questions to get your role in front of only the most qualified people, and then just use the simple tools on LinkedIn Jobs to quickly filter and prioritize who you would like to interview and hire. So LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates worth interviewing faster. Did you know that every week, actually, nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? So post your job for free at linkedin.com/crypto. That's linkedin.com/crypto to post your job for free. Terms and conditions do apply.
why are regulators scared about stable coins?
This is just how that grow, I think, out of that Libra phase, right? They saw from one moment to the next that there was this stable coin that could be transacted outside of the financial system. And for I think before that, I mean, Bitcoin was not taken that seriously as a medium of exchange just because of the volatility, right? And but then Libra came, or at least these stable coins started to become bigger. And those are stable, I've known people who use them in exchange with banks, the idea of just a type of dollar floating around outside of the banking system, unregulated. Yeah, I mean, if you're a regulator, that is scary.
So yes, Tether and USDC are backed by commercial paper and all kinds of other things. We think of it as backed dollar for dollar in a bank account. That part might not be always accurate, but there is something there. Then you have algorithmic stable coins like DAI, which is backed by reserves of Ethereum, and UST, that's backed by reserves of Luna. I don't know that those particular algorithmic stable coins can be shut down because they're decentralized.
That's a very good observation in general, right? A lot of these, if you want to have regulations, you need someone to enforce them upon. And if technologies are decentralized, they're becoming difficult to target, I guess. But if you read the proposed legislation, which is in the digital asset bill, then it says that the unauthorized use of fiat-based stable coins, that is going to be discouraged or banned in a sense. So then it doesn't really matter how the stable coin is created. If it's being used by a person in the US, then that could fall under that definition, and that needs to be authorized by the Treasury. You have to also understand a lot of these regulations are technologically neutral. So they don't mind necessarily how they do it, but what they do. And what you could happen is that any kind of US exchange, if a law like that passes, then any kind of exchange in the US, they will not allow stable coins to be traded and definitely not sent to a private wallet.
Interesting. So assuming this infrastructure bill, because all this stuff that we're talking about in regards to the infrastructure bill is kind of being voted on this week, the week of September 28th.
Yes. Let me make a correction. So there's two bills being introduced, right? So the infrastructure bill contains the IRS reporting. So that would be the broker definition, right, that we discussed, and the cash reporting transaction. But there is another bill being introduced that has been introduced in the House, and that is called the Digital Asset Market Structure and Investor Protection Act.
Okay.
So that has been introduced, in July, and that has been a bit under the radar yet. Nobody has really looked at it, and that's what I set out to do. And that's where I recognize a lot of these FATF regulations now being introduced in U.S. law. So there are two bills. So the one that are currently, one currently being discussed, the infrastructure bill, does not contain anything on stable coins or privacy coins or private wallets, anything of that. Yeah.
And then when is the Digital Asset Market Structure and Investor Protection Act bill going to be voted on, or when could that potentially, again, because when this could potentially come into effect?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I've struggled with that as well. I mostly researched it because it's an official bill and it has been introduced, but I have received a lot of feedback of people who are more familiar with the legal process, or at least the legislative process in the US. And they have told me that this bill, it's going to face a lot of headwind as well, because it doesn't have the wide support. It doesn't have a report in the Senate yet. It's to me, it's a very broad bill that is definitely, inspired also by international regulators to what the US already agreed to, right, through the G20 meeting. So I find it hard to believe that this is just a trial balloon. But yeah, if this is going to be enforced in law, that is going to take a significant time, because it has not been voted on, and there, I don't think it's even been proposed. It's first needs to go to a couple of committees. But yeah, I think it's good to talk about it now, because at least then there, I guess then people could still have their say on it, right? It seemed to be introduced a little bit quietly, and but it definitely has a lot of invasive clauses in it. So,
So I'll be the one to play devil's advocate. What are the silver linings for more regulation? For saying, okay, this basket of crypto is in charge, or is being regulated by the CFTC. These are all commodities, and this basket is now securities. What investor protections, quote unquote, get added that we don't already have?
That's a good question. Well, in terms of securities,
I was hoping you'd know.
Now, in terms of securities, there are sort of two things that are added, and it means that so both the primary market and the secondary market are going to be regulated. And in terms of the primary market, that just means that everybody who's going to issue a security, which is going to be a lot of ICOs. They could, they will have to do provide more information. They have to provide transparency in terms of their accounting and the ownership. So in that sense, a new ICO that's going to be regulated as a security in the US would definitely have a lot of more transparency and So I guess in that sense it could be a better thing. I would not. I probably would not think that you are considered that investor protection, but that means that once something is a security, it needs to be traded on a regulated exchange.
And so a lot of people are like, even people have asked me, they're like, wait, they don't even know what a security is. They're like, is a stock a security? Is cash a security? Is crypto a security? And it's like all these definitions. And so, Coinbase right now, as it is, like in Kraken, for instance, or Gemini, FTX US, Binance US, all of these, fully, they're regulated exchanges. They're in America, they're operating out of the States, and they trade, assets that at once were ICOs-ish, right? I mean, Uniswap or Compound or MakerDAO or, right, all these different assets that, they're not registered securities, right? And Coinbase is operating not as a registered, securities license, an exchange. And so if this sort of, if these laws are passed, does each coin have to retrospectively go back and, do a Howey test and, register with the SEC or else get kicked off of Coinbase or something? Like, this is insane.
Yeah. So what this law says that they're first going to focus on the biggest 25 assets in terms of market capitalization.
Okay.
In this act, first of all, the Bitcoin and Ether and their hard forks are considered commodities. So
they're excluded.
They're excluded from this particular regulation. But anything else, so there's going to be a joint guidelines issued by the CFTC and the SEC. So they're going to look at all these individual projects, and then they're going to determine if these are securities or not. And then they will issue those guidelines, and then the ones who are regulated as securities are going to be regulated as securities. And if they're then not properly licensed, they might just be delisted. The ones that are commodities, they've then become on a different. And then on the commodities regulations only focusing on specific type of transactions, not on the coin itself.
Wow.
And so it's going to be interesting also to see what happens with the Ripple case, because that definitely is going to establish also some more guidance as to what the law will look at and what are to be commodities and what are to be securities.
Yeah, I would love. I mean, if you have any insight that you could share on that Ripple case, happy to hear it now. Your opinion?
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean, everything I get is. From a guy named Jeremy Hogan. He's on YouTube. He's a very good commentator and he follows that case closely. But I don't have any particular insight.
I've expected Ripple just to get another slap on the wrist, just like EOS did. I don't see too much more happening to them. You know, Kraken just had to pay $1 million fine for offering a margin platform to U.S. customers, which to me is completely ridiculous that it's illegal. But I think we're going to see a lot fewer ways to make money in crypto if all these laws pass. You know, SEC is going after Coinbase for wanting to offer interest on stable coins. I think we're going to see lending platforms continue to be attacked and being told not just we're going to fine you, but shut down these platforms because you're competing with banks and banks can't compete with the returns you're giving people. So the whole concept of a free market is really being challenged right now. And it's really, really difficult to say, okay, these regulators have our best interests in mind with investor protections when they're taking away the one escape hatch we had from poverty under the guise of, well, there's a couple bad actors around here that might steal your crypto. So we're going to, we, the US government, are going to come in and protect you.
Yeah. I mean,
all this freedom.
Yeah. You guys see Gary Gensler. I mean, you know, God bless him, but you know, this guy's worth, you know, $119 million and he has the nerve to, you know, read a propaganda ad about if you save $5 a week, by the time you're 60 or whatever, you'll have $130,000 and you'll be set up. It's like, you got to be kidding me. That's the sort of behavior you're going to encourage in our youth. Like it was a propaganda ad to college kids. And he's saying, start saving while you're young. Okay. I'm a big proponent of saving and all that kind of stuff, but don't, you know, tell the college kids that by the time you're, you know, 60 and you'll have $130,000, that life's going to be cheeky. A, you're going to lose out to inflation. And B, why aren't you encouraging these kids to take risks and to build businesses and like, instead of just being a cog in the wheel or to like invest, but like save $5 like that to me, like, I don't know, that just bummed me out. It was like, we need more from our leaders. And I really do think like by the time I have kids and, you know, hopefully the world, the leadership just looks a little different because we just have people that are out of touch right now. They're just so out of touch with the youth. And I think I heard a stat like within the next 5 years or by 2030 or something, you know, there millennials will be the greatest, you know, portion of the population. And to me, right, we, you know, the majority of people that are in Congress, like, sure, you know, we elected them and stuff, but they're like, you know, 70, 80 years old. They have no idea what's going on with crypto or the internet or Netflix, let alone Facebook or anything. And so for them to try and slap on regulations from their ivory tower, I mean, obviously it irritates me, but whatever.
So, I mean, I would love to see Andre Cronje go before Congress and be like, okay, let's go through your finance code line by line by line. And you tell me what's a security and you tell me what's illegal. You tell me which switches I need to change in order to be compliant with your 100,000 laws in this country. None of them could do it. Not one. And they're going to have an oversight committee made up of people in this industry. That's what it's going to have to come down to.
Ryan,
they're not going to understand all the different upgrades and things going on. Ryan Selkis from Messari would be a fantastic choice.
He's got my vote. He's got my vote.
And mine as well.
For Senate, for president, for whatever. The guy is so authentic. And guys, if you haven't checked out Messari.io, it's a great website. They've got awesome data. It's, you know, they got free to use stuff. They got paid to use stuff. But the guy who founded it is this guy named Ryan Selkis. And he's always posting things on Twitter. He's trying to rally the troops that are like, you know, shedding light on, you know, positive sort of crypto lobbying efforts. And that is like kind of, you know, bipartisan, right? He's like starting to bring to my mind this idea of like single issue voting. And like, you know, we're voting for financial freedom and financial sovereignty and for independence. We're not voting left or right. We're not voting, right, you know, socially liberal or socially conservative. We just want, you know, independence, I think. And so,
even playing field.
Even playing field. And we want even upward mobility. The world wants upward freaking mobility. And crypto is such a vehicle for that. And you know, and so anyhow, so you know, look him up, look up his, you know, company.
Definitely.
We'd love to have him on the show to talk about this stuff too. So if anybody knows him, send this to him and let him know we want to come to the show.
Definitely. Wesley, one more question regarding, you know, even playing field. The whole case of AMC and Robinhood and Citadel, Ken Griffin, the CEO of Citadel, lied under oath about this. And now Twitter's trying to bury the news, so as many other people. Have you heard anything about that case? And is there even a chance justice is going to be served, or will it just be another, you know, billion-dollar slap on the wrist for a company that prints billion-dollar checks for breakfast?
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I don't have any insights to that. I did follow the case. I really enjoyed the financial activism of that subreddit. But yeah, I don't know any specifics to that.
Okay, figured I'd just check anyway. One other thing that was mentioned in your summary was a term called desecuritization, where, if I understand correctly, it allows members of a decentralized network that's been deemed a security to make an appeal to the SEC to have that token no longer be considered a security. Is that true?
Yeah, but that's included in that bill. And the way I see it, I mean, it is definitely interesting, but yeah, well, what it seems to be that at one point, when a network is fully decentralized, and this is also a bit of a question mark to me, how they really see this as regulators. Once a network is fully decentralized, who are they going to regulate? You know, who's going to file the annual reports and things like that? If there's no one to sue, I mean, I give you an example. Let's look at the Ripple case. Let's say the judge they discover massive fraud and they say, okay, Ripple, you all get sued. Everybody's gonna throw in jail. You know, then the coin is still there. XRP is still there. People are still building on it. So who's going to be responsible for this regulation, right? So that's a big question mark. I don't see how they gonna deal with it. Yeah, desecuritization could be one thing, right? Once there's no one to go after, then it's, by definition, I guess, a commodity. But we'll have to see how that plays out.
Wow. This has been fascinating. There's so many different areas I want to go. We've already been going for 45 minutes. I still got more questions. But one of the things that that's really excited me has been El Salvador legally making Bitcoin legal tender, right? And there's a couple other countries that have those proposals out there. The IMF, the International Monetary Fund, they know Likey. They came down and told, you know, El Salvador that they don't really approve of what they're doing. And Nayib Bukele, who is the president of El Salvador, were just kind of like, all right, well, you know, watch us. So it seems like there's lots of, you know, adoption at the legal level here of Bitcoin in like South American countries and some lesser countries. Do you have any like insight into some of the dynamics that are going on there? And do you think that more third world countries, I shouldn't call it third world, but, you know, developing countries, are they going to turn to Bitcoin as like a legal tender, do you think?
Well, I think they're, if it's a success, then they will. And I also think, even if they don't use it as legal tender, I mean, a lot of countries at one point, they will start to use it, right? Especially in terms of remittances. I definitely see that movement, that's not going to stop. And especially those countries, they are obviously a bit more technologically behind, but these people are not, they're not stupid, right? I mean, they see the money they pay to companies like Western Union. And if the same can be done with Lightning Network for half a cent or whatever, obviously they're not going to ignore that for long. That matters a lot to these people. So I do think that movement is going to grow.
Yeah, that's a movement, I agree, that won't be slowing down. It's kind of like the can of worms, right? You open it up and you can't put it back. Or maybe that's the Pandora's box, right? Once you have Pandora's box, you can't put Pandora back. Yeah. But Wes, this has been awesome. So we've asked a lot of questions, right? And what questions did not we ask? Let me rephrase that. What questions didn't we ask that we should have asked?
Well, I guess, the use case, what we touched on the last section, I guess that's really important. It has to be understood that regulations can only be enforced through financial intermediaries, but Bitcoin doesn't need those. And the more we transact in a legal and just normal way, like people sending money to El Salvador. Yeah, the more difficult it becomes to really enforce any of this. It is true that if these regulations pass, it's definitely going to affect people who want to do things that are normally regulated, right? Like issuing ICOs or maybe issuing a decentralized finance or things like that. But general transactions, they are excluded as of now. If Bitcoin is a commodity, they're also not going to be made illegal. Governments are not going to ban the use of crypto. And especially once these kind of legislation passes, they cannot.
Yeah. Well, just to play devil's advocate there, I mean, they banned hemp, right? I mean, was a commodity. People used hemp to make rope, but then other people used it for drugs or whatever. There's flowers that grow on it.
It was competing with cotton. They didn't like that.
Exactly. It was just competing with cotton and lumber and all these other commodity industries. So I wouldn't be surprised. And in fact, didn't back in, executive order 19, something or other, 1933, but it was like Eisenhower made gold illegal, hoarding gold illegal at one point.
Yep.
I think it was because they needed, the banks needed more gold in their reserves in order to, issue more money. This was back when we were still in the gold standard, so that they could continue to finance the war efforts. They said, everybody send in your gold. And so imagine this, right? And it was like, if you don't, like, and we find it, you're going to prison or whatever. So imagine if, we get into a war or whatever, and they say, all right, everybody send in all your gold, all your Bitcoin, all your stocks, whatever, we're taking it, we're going to finance this war effort. I mean, I don't know. It's just crazy.
Well, considering the U.S. averages a major war every 20 years, I don't think it's that far-fetched at all to say, well, all the crypto that's on exchanges now is going to be frozen and used to finance this war effort, and we'll pay you back a couple percent interest on all your crypto just to keep you happy.
You're going to give me nightmares. But
I don't want this to happen at all. So is there any means to fight back legally, Wesley? Like, what – everyone listening right now is going, oh my God, what do we do? What do we do?
Can we call our senators? What can we do?
Well, the first step, definitely, because none of this is law yet, right? So, I guess through the normal lobbying process, I guess laws can be amended or prevented from being passed. So that would be the first step. Now, to fight something legally, it first has to be law. We first need to know what exactly is in those laws, right? So I guess, the normal political process. I mean, a lot of has happened already with this infrastructure bill, and a couple of senators were on board, I guess. So, that would be the first bet.
All right. Well, everybody just, don't panic. Everybody remain calm. These things take a long time to figure themselves out. Now, crypto is still alive. It's healthy. And, institutional adoption is still, kind of coming in like a tidal wave. And kind of my closing notes is that just, regulation is good, and getting these sort of, guidelines around these assets early, right? Right now is, generally early. It's good because it allows the rails for traditional finance and pension funds and, traditional mutual funds and very, very, very tightly regulated entities in order to start getting exposure to Bitcoin and to Ethereum and to other, valuable public blockchains that have, cryptocurrencies on them. And so I think as we, crypto goes through its, growing pains, that's all this is growing pains and contractions, right? Like you're birthing something, you call it a contraction, right? Well, we also call market corrections a contraction. There's, it's sometimes it expands and prices go wild, and sometimes it contracts and prices go steady. And so that's kind of the phase in the market we're in. There's lots of uncertainty, right? The U in FUD, fear, uncertainty, doubt. And right now, the markets, above all else, they hate uncertainty, right? And so right now, a lot of uncertainty with regulation, things are pending, but remain calm, and continue to analyze the space logically and don't freak out. And I think the worst thing that happens is people see some sort of news and there's a FUD article and people just panic sell everything. They're like, well, I'll buy back when the coast is clear. And then they end up getting bitter to the entire space because, crypto lives and crypto goes on. And 6 months later, crypto is higher. And you're like, well, didn't you tell me that Tether was going to, implode the industry and China was going to bring down the industry? And they're looking at it. Well, Jim Cramer said this and that. And it's like, well, you know, just don't panic and just remain calm, because at the end of the day, you know, crypto is a hydra, right? You cut off one head, it's going to grow seven heads in its place. It's quite unstoppable. And these it's code that lives on, you know, computers all around the world. So it's hard to shut down. But
a hydra is a great example of Jim Cramer. You just can't get him to leave your life, no matter how much you try to untarget your ads. But for the love of God, don't take advice from that guy. Wesley, before we let you get out of here and get on with your day, I just want to say thank you so much. Do you have any closing notes or thoughts that you want to leave us with? Is there a better alternative or some new ideas out there that you've heard that might be some merit for us to study?
Well, I just wanted to continue what Bryce said mostly. Technology is distributed around the world. There's a block every 10 minutes. This is not going to stop. We will be able to use it. It is not impossible to download a wallet. So a lot of what we like about crypto will remain. And in addition, institutional adoption could be possible with regulation could be very good for the price as well. And as well, do look at the laws that are coming down the line and analyze your own things that you do online with that, because they're going to matter, and some projects are likely going to be to suffer from it.
All right. Well, this has been truly enlightening, Wesley. We hope to have you back on the show again to talk about regulation as things kind of come out, and you'll be our guy. We really appreciate it, and we'll stay in touch.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.